What's up, everybody? Happy Wednesday and welcome to Puck Culture. Jackie Redmond hanging out with Callie, Ryan Callahan. I feel like we haven't had you on this show in a while.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. I think I've done two of them, but it's been about a month, maybe a little more.
And January felt like it was about 3 months, so it feels even longer, you know?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe you didn't like having me on the first couple times.
No chance. Fan favorite right here. Good holiday, though?
Yeah, really good.
I haven't seen you since the holiday.
Yeah, family went back to Rochester, enjoyed some time there with grandparents.
And yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Kiddos back in school or back in daycare, or what's going on?
A little bit of school. So they had like 2 weeks off for Christmas. We went home for 2 weeks, but it was a long, I don't remember getting 2 weeks when I was young for Christmas.
Yeah, well, yeah, 2 weeks
really?
Was the norm.
Maybe
in Canada it was.
Maybe it's just different now because I got kids running around.
It probably feels a little longer
feels
maybe
like
to
two
you.
Months.
This just popped in my head right now. I wasn't planning on asking you this before, but like, does Ryan Callahan, like, are you going to do homework with your kids?
Oh yeah, I definitely do.
Is it hard?
It is.
Because I fear, like, one day when I have children, them bringing me math homework and me being like, uh-oh.
Yeah, so my older daughter's, she's 7, she's in second grade, and they do this new math, it's like core math, they call it, or something like that.
Okay.
I struggle with it. It's second grade math, and I was pretty good at math, but we're doing it, and she's like, no, it has to be done this way. I'm like, why can't we just add these up? She's like, nope, it's got to be done this way.
So
I'm
it's
like,
the process of how you get to the number?
Exactly.
Okay, I vaguely remember that from school, and I hate that principle. Like, if you get the right number, does it really matter how you got there?
So that's usually when I tap mom in, and I'm like, I'm done.
Your turn. Yeah. You guys are like tag teams in wrestling. You're like, all right, you're in. I need a break from this
now. I'll take the younger daughter. She's in kindergarten, so I'm still okay with that math.
Also, grade 2 homework. I don't remember having homework in grade 2.
Yeah. Kindergarten, they have homework too every night. It's crazy.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Is it coloring?
Yeah, a lot of like cut and paste, and she's learning how to read a little bit, so it's
funner.
Exactly.
That's not a word, but it's more fun homework. All right, we're going to move on to hockey before I embarrass myself further. Coming off a 13-game night in the NHL, I mean, Alex Ovechkin, what he is doing is absolutely ridiculous. Pots a hat trick last night as he inches even closer to 700. As a former player, how impressive is what he's doing right now to you?
Very impressive. Just the mere fact that he's in sight, or we're talking about the Wayne Gretzky all-time goal record, is absolutely absurd to me.
It's supposed to be unbreakable, right?
Unbreakable. I mean, you look at that, but we're talking about it, and I think he has a chance. Obviously, he's still far away, but every time I think, you know what, he's not going to get there, last night he throws a hat trick, so he's getting close.
He's getting so close to 700, which in and of itself is impressive. There's only a handful of players that have scored 700 goals in a career, but the fact that he's getting closer, what do you think would be better for the game? For Wayne Gretzky to hold on to the record, or for Ovi to eventually break it?
I think Ovi breaking it would be better for the game, because I think it would be so much energy and so much attention as he gets closer and closer.
And for kids, right? Like kids that are coming up now that Wayne Gretzky, like, is the great one. He's incredible, but he's before their time now. Like, teenagers, Wayne Gretzky is someone that they hear about and they read about, not somebody that they ever got to watch play.
Yeah, exactly, and I think it would grow the game. And like you said, I think people that are young kids that don't see Gretzky play or anything like that, they look up to Ovechkin and see him get close or even break it would be awesome. I think it's going to be tough, though. People have asked me, and I say no, just because of longevity and injuries. Obviously, he's been extremely healthy through his career. I hope he stays healthy, but things happen, and I think the odds are against him, but he keeps going like this.
How many do you think he'll score this year? I mean, he's at 40 right now on the season, I believe.
Yeah, be cool if I could see him hit 60. I mean, that would be a...
60. We haven't seen that since who? Stamkos?
Stamkos hit 60, yeah.
And how long ago was that?
That would have been, don't hold me to this, but around 2010-ish.
Yeah, so a long time ago.
Yeah, so it's been a while.
Yeah, we need a 60-goal scorer this year,
That'd
think.
That'd be cool.
Yeah,
really cool.
it would be super cool. So Ovi continues to roll. The Washington Capitals continue to look like a dominant force in the Eastern Conference. You go to the Atlantic Division, and Toronto is in panic mode right now. We all know that market. The smallest thing can cause absolute panic. But I think here it's absolutely warranted. Frederik Andersen goes down to injury in their last game against the Panthers. They lose the game. The Panthers didn't even have Barkov in the lineup. And now Freddie Andersen day-to-day with what they're calling a neck injury. Where's your level of concern for the Leafs when you look at what that team is right now and the fact that Freddie Andersen is on the shelf?
Extremely high. I think even with Freddie Andersen, it's a high panic level right now in Toronto, just on the outside looking in. And The teams they have to jump to get there, and the way they're playing, I mean, they're not consistent defensively. Everybody knows that. And with Freddie Anderson out, there's going to be even more attention to detail on defense. And I don't know if they can do that. They've preached it for so long and they haven't done it yet. But maybe an injury to Freddie Anderson wakes everybody up and realizes they got to worry about their end first. And if Freddie Anderson is out for a little while, though, I do not see them making the playoffs.
No, I'm with you. To me, it's, first of all, the goaltending situation or the lack of depth at the goaltending position is not a new issue for the team. And the defensive issues are definitely not a new issue for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I look at the situation that they're in, and I can't help but kind of look at Kyle Dubas and think, this is probably a situation that should have been addressed in the offseason, at least in terms of the backup goaltender. But I struggle to see them confidently making the postseason if Freddie Anderson is out for an extended period. And I tweeted about it, and I was shocked at the amount of people that responded to my tweet and said, Frederick Anderson is a mediocre goaltender. Someone used the term garbage. Someone said below average. And I'm sitting there like, I wish I had a time machine where I could go and change the last 6 months and show people what the Leafs' record would be if they did not have Frederick Anderson between the pipes.
That's absurd that they say that. I mean, they want to talk about defensive hockey, how it's brutal. That, I mean, he covers up so many mistakes for them. I mean, obviously, you know, you let some goals in, but with the amount of chances that they give up.
And high danger chances, too,
Freddie,
I would assume.
Anderson, I mean, they're not, I don't even think they're in the playoff conversation right now with the way they play defensively. So, some passionate Leaf fans out there, and you're going to probably get
give them that.
Both ends of the spectrum. But by no means is he average or below average. I think he's one of the top goaltenders, and what he's done in Toronto, he shows that. I mean, he keeps that team in games, and, you know, without him, they'd be in trouble.
And even with Freddie Anderson, you know, they're fighting for that third spot with the Florida Panthers. That was a huge game for both of those teams. So for Toronto to drop that game and lose their goaltender is certainly, I would say, the worst-case scenario probably for Toronto. Now, they're calling it a neck injury. They're saying it's day-to-day. But we never really fully know what's going on with these injuries. Teams are somewhat secretive, and for a good reason. The trade deadline's coming up. Is there a chance that this injury could be worse than they're letting on?
Well, 100%, I think.
Because I hear neck injury, and I'm like, I don't think that's ever minor, but.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've seen it in the past that all of a sudden it's day-to-day with a neck, and then a week later it's week-to-week just because, you know, all of a sudden we thought it was a neck injury and it's actually your head. You know, you don't know where sometimes, and I don't know if this is the case with Freddie Anderson at all, but.
Again, we're just speculating.
Sometimes you get headaches and you think it's your neck because you got a bit of a whiplash, but all of a sudden your neck is starting to feel better and those headaches are still going, and it's all of a sudden it's a concussion. So I don't know if that's, like I said, I don't know if that's the case with Freddie Anderson, but. Mm-hmm. You never know. I mean, the head neck area is always a delicate area, and you don't know how long that's going to take to heal.
What about Michael Hutchinson, right? This happens, and there's a huge section of the media that's saying, you know, he's not going to be able to carry this team for a long time should Frederick Anderson be out. Is there an element to this that maybe motivates the rest of the team? Like, oh gosh, Frederick Anderson's down. Everyone's saying it's panic time in Toronto. Nobody believes in us. Is there an element where maybe the team rallies around something like that?
Yeah, it's something you could bond together for sure as a group inside. And there's so much noise in Toronto on the outside and everything. And you could say, you know what, guys, let's worry about us in this room. Let's block the outside noise and let's go get it done. But on the other side, too, maybe Hutchinson, knowing that he has the number one spot, is a little bit more calm and confident going in there.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, he doesn't have Freddie Anderson that has the net. The net's his for a while now, so, or however long he's out. And seen it in Columbus with Elvis, so.
Yes, you know, my gosh, Elvis is alive and well in Columbus. And I was actually thinking about this this morning. So Elvis is the goaltender on my fantasy hockey team. So great pickup by me.
Great,
I'm gonna just pat myself on the back for that one. But it's played out very well for my fantasy team, but obviously even more so for the Columbus Blue Jackets. At what point does Elvis Merzlikins enter the Calder conversation for Rookie of the Year? Because he's made 21 starts, which is a good chunk. He's got a .929 save percentage over those 21 starts. And if you look at his numbers, since Korpisalo has gone down to injury, they're even better. At what point does he warrant that conversation?
Yeah, I think he's starting to break into the conversation right now. It's going to depend on how many games he plays down the stretch once Korpisalo is back. But if he continues to be the number one guy and continues to put up these numbers, he's in top three for Calder easily.
Yeah, like he has to me, he's already sort of entering that conversation and deserves that credit. But because if he comes in and doesn't play well, where's Columbus?
Yeah.
The fact that the Blue Jackets are in the playoff conversation is mind-blowing to me, and he's a big part of it. 951 save percentage since taking over on New Year's Eve, so when Corposalo went down.
I mean, he's got to be in the conversation, as you said, right now, but it's going to be interesting when Corposalo comes back what they do there. I think you have to ride the hot goalie. And
well, you know Torts a little bit. What do you, yeah. He's so close to the vest about his plans, especially when it comes to goaltenders.
What
do you think he would do?
He rides the hot guy. You have to. They'll try to get Corposalo back in there, but like in a backup role, I think a game here, a game there. But if Aldis keeps playing the way he does, there's no way you could not play him. That's the hard part about this business. I've seen it 100 times where a guy gets hurt, a new guy comes in and takes your spot. And if he's playing well, he's going
to
play.
You have to go with it, right?
It's a winning business. I mean, you can't hold on to your spot forever just because you're hurt. And that's how this business is. It's what have you done for me lately type of thing. And, and right now, Aldis is carrying them.
Are the Blue Jackets sort of like the people's team? I feel like every hockey fan, regardless of what team they hardcore cheer for, a little bit roots for Columbus.
Yeah,
they have that like element to them.
I got a sour taste in my mouth about Columbus after last year, but I do agree with you.
And
I think part of that is what they did last year. I mean, knocking us out, arguably the cup favorites in four games. I think a lot of people were cheering for them.
It's still crazy when I think about the Columbus Blue Jackets, a team that had never won a playoff series in their history.
Okay.
And the one playoff series that they've won is against one of the best regular season teams ever.
Yeah.
You want to kick me out of here yet?
Enough.
Or what?
It's going to be my last show.
He's never coming back. It's getting heated, which is a good transition to the Battle of Alberta, because we have not chatted about that intense rivalry that has certainly quadrupled in intensity over the last month. As a former player, you watch that. Is that the best?
Awesome. I think it's great. I mean, I've never been really in the regular season this year, been excited to really watch a game. And those games, I was excited to watch just because of the emotion in it. Obviously, leading up, you knew there probably would be a couple fights. But more than that, just the emotion in the game.
As Torts would say, there was a lot of hate.
A lot of hate,
There's
yes.
hate back now in the league.
Yes, hate on the ice, hate in the crowd. That old rivalry is well and big again. So it's good for the game.
How much respect do you think Matthew Tkachuk earned, not just from Cassian and from the Oilers, but the rest of the league for, responding to being called out?
A ton of respect. I mean, and not only being called out and fighting Cassian. Cassian is a small guy. I mean, he can chuck him. I've seen him do some damage to a lot of guys. So for Tkachuk to step up and drop the gloves with him after what I think are a couple questionable hits, it's good for Tkachuk. And I think he earned a lot of respect, not only in around the league, but in the dressing rooms too. That goes a long way with your teammates.
With your own teammates,
That's a lot of respect to be able to do that.
Yeah, especially because he's a player that is so good at agitating the opposition. And I'm sure sometimes that translates into a more physical game for his teammates as opposed to just him, right? I mean, it affects everybody.
It does. And sometimes you'll see your teammate running around and you're like, oh boy, here we go. Because it's coming back. They don't get a hold of him. It's coming at somebody. So it's good for him to step up and do it himself. And also, not a lot of talk. It's Cam Talbot stepping up and fighting Mike Smith.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God, goalie fights. Everybody loves him.
That was great, but I mean, good for Talbot jumping in there. I mean, he could have done a little bit better, but I mean, Smith's a big guy, very athletic guy, long reach on him.
Fight him.
I mean, good for Talbot to step up and fight him.
What did you think of David Riddick's now infamous stick toss? It's like his version of the bat flip, I suppose.
I know. There's a little. It was a little much for me.
Are you old school? Are you more old school?
I am more old school, and that's a little much for me, and I'm sure that's part of the reason why this rivalry is so heated. But
well, Mike Smith said that it motivated the team. Like, that
100%.
Was a motivating force. And then, obviously, in the last game they played, Edmonton dominated on the scoreboard, regardless of all the other dramatics that went on.
Yeah, I mean, that is. I mean, teams rally, it's kind of like bulletin board material in the locker room where, someone says a quote about your team that you're easy to play against, or something like that happens where the stick flip, you get motivated by that for sure. I remember in New York, Artie Anisimov, we were playing the Lightning. He scored. He turned around and he shot the goalie with his stick.
Oh, yes.
The whole melee that ensued afterwards.
Rupper talked about that on his show before. He went in and he was like,
poor Artie. He had no idea either. He's sorry by me, guys. And did this whole thing. He's like, my favorite player in Russia does it all the time. I didn't know it was a problem.
Yeah, just totally innocent, right?
Yeah,
like, I just thought it was, like, fun. When you look at your career, what's the most heated, let's just like isolate it to maybe a game or maybe it's a playoff series, but what's the most heated on ice event you've been a part of?
Dating back to Rupper when we were in New York. Rupper's name gets brought up again, but that 5-on-5 line brawl against New Jersey Devils when I was in New York at Madison Square Garden to start the game.
How did that come to be? What was like the lead up to this? To this brawl, do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what happened in previous games, but there were some incidents in previous games that obviously that built this up. And we were the home team at the time, so Torts was our coach and Pete DeBoer was on the other end. So New Jersey has to enter their lineup first. So they entered their lineup and obviously started all tough guys, in Jersey. So I remember Torts coming in, reading the lineup card, and he's like, guys, we got Jersey's lineup, and I don't know his exact words, but he's like, you know, this is what we have to do. This is who's starting, and right away you knew that it was
going to be. As soon as you read off the names, you're like, okay, it's
here,
on, I guess.
Here we go. I think Bickle was our centerman defenseman at the time, so you knew something was going down, and Torts and DeBoer are yelling back and forth at each other. The garden was going nuts, and it was pretty emotional.
When you hear your coach getting involved with the other coach and they're yelling at each other, does that hype you up? Like, what does that do to sort of the energy of the bench?
It does, yeah. It gets your attention very, very fast, and you realize that energy coming from behind you, you know, just translates onto the ice, and everybody gets just more excited and amped up.
Even the fans, right?
Like,
I'm sure
you
must have looked up at the fans at some point, and they must have just been.
Yeah, they're going nuts.
Totally into it.
Which is awesome. I mean, it's a playoff type atmosphere in January.
Who's the toughest guy you ever played with?
The toughest guy I've ever played with.
I guess it depends how you look at the word tough, but.
Yeah, I mean, if you're just talking, I guess, strictly fighting, John Scott was probably up there, the toughest I've ever played with, yeah.
All right, cool. Line brawls, they don't happen very much anymore, right?
No.
Like right off the opening face-off?
Yeah, not very much at all.
No.
The game's changed.
I feel like coaches try to stay away from that. Like, I forget which game in the Battle of Alberta it was, but it was, I think it might have been the second one in the last trio of them that were all close together, where everyone was like anticipating the lead-up and the hype, and then the lineups to open, like Kachuk wasn't on the ice and Cassian I don't think was on the ice, and I saw it and I was like, what are we trying to avoid here? Like eventually it's gonna happen.
Well, I think as a coach too, you're the ones that are setting the lineup, so by no means do you want to put your player in a spot where he has to fight.
He feels like it's being set up
set up where you're forcing your players to be in a spot where literally they have to fight.
So I
think that goes to a lot to the coaches and respect to the players that if you do want to fight, you guys can do it on your own terms. And I'm not going to put you in a situation where you have to drop the gloves, which is great.
I liked Cassian's comments after that game where he fought Kachuk and he said, Matt Kachuk, he was like kind of asking me to go a few times, but I thought I'd make him wait it out, like get into his head a little bit, which I thought was very clever.
Yeah, because I've been in situations before too where a little maybe a questionable hit, or you know, maybe a fight's coming up and you want to get it over with right away. I mean,
you don't want to be thinking about it.
You just want to get it done with, continue on with the game. So Cassian doing that is a little bit of mind games, and that's awesome.
And then we see Brady Kachuk fight PK Subban in that same, you know, area of days.
I
that
know.
Was crazy.
The Kachuk family, a little bit of a
it's in their
there.
Blood, I suppose.
Yeah,
it was good. All right, we got like 30 games left. When you look at this final stretch, what's like the most intriguing team or storyline or battle for you in terms of the playoff race?
Yeah, I think the Pacific is pretty interesting. Whether it's the playoff picture there, who's going to make it in, who's not going to make it in there.
Up for grabs, that's for sure.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I'd like to see the Battle of Alberta. I'm really intrigued. I'd love to see that in the first round, I guess, in the East. Same thing. I'm just excited. The playoffs are so tight. They're so close to the standings. I think it's going to come down to the last week and who gets in, who doesn't. And that's what I'm most excited about is once the games amp up another.
I think the scoreboard watching, the daily strength of schedule talks, like who's got a tough schedule
right
now.
You get the points, how many points you need to get in. And once that starts, that's when things get exciting. The trade deadline, obviously,
players say that they don't pay attention to that, but do they?
Oh, 100% you pay attention to it. I remember sitting on the bench and you're looking up at the rolling scoreboard.
Yeah, you're like,
oh, Boston's winning. We better get going here, you know, or whatever.
I love it.
I can be honest now. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. What about trade deadline? That's coming up, and you don't really have to worry about anything.
That's so nice. Oh, I'm
so
excited.
Are you like the most relaxed in February you've ever been?
I know. Februarys are always the worst, so not having to worry about it this year is really nice.
Yeah, you'll
really,
get to
really nice.
either be a part of our coverage or you'll just be at home watching on TV. Yeah.
Turn my phone on, I don't have to worry about that.
You'll be the one texting your old, like your buddies, being like, hey, did you see your...
Just giving them unknown numbers, random phone calls.
Yeah. Did you hear you got traded? And I was like, what? You should prank a couple of people.
That's not nice. No, because I've been in that situation where your nerves are high and... It's the worst when your name's out there. You know you could be moved.
And then you like don't necessarily know where.
And like the year I got moved in New York, I mean, that whole month and a half, 2 months leading up to it, I didn't sleep at all. I was nervous. It was awful. I mean, it's the most nervous I've ever been in my entire life just because of everything
going
on there.
And I assume, too, like for your wife, it must have been so hard just like, okay, where are we going to, because she probably takes on a lot of the brunt of like, okay, we have to move, we have to get our kids moved, we have to figure out where they're going to go to school, and
it's
who's
so
going to take care of them.
That's what the hardest part is, your family, not you. I mean, trying to deal with your family. So when I was in New York, she was pregnant with our, we had a two-year-old.
Oh, that's a great time to be stressed out.
We had a two-year-old, she was pregnant, she was due in August. So I remember that day, it was a game day, I was in, at the Garden. I did the pregame skate afterwards. We're sitting in the training room and I see on TSN that I get traded. Our PR guy walks in 30 seconds later, talk to Slats. So that whole thing, I call her and I'm like, listen, you know, we got moved and we're going to Tampa. And I came home, I got home at like 2 o'clock. I had a 7 o'clock flight and I told her, I'm like, you got to figure out the apartment. You got to figure out
the list that
everything.
She probably
like,
had to figure out.
So I was
stuff.
Gone. I was on a flight. I was at a Tampa hotel by 10 PM. So I got traded at noon. I was in Tampa by 10 and played the next day for Tampa. So it's a whirlwind. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, how much it affects your family.
Yeah.
You know,
big
time. It's hard. I mean, you know, picture yourself, try to picture yourself one day, all of a sudden you got to go tell your family that we're moving cities and,
There's no lead up of preparation, right?
No.
Where your wife's like got like a month and she knows where she's going and she's like no lead up whatsoever. Yeah. It's like, hey, Tampa.
It could have been anywhere. So that's the thing. You don't know where you're going and the anxiety, the rumors are out there. I mean, even if you try to avoid them, you see them and they're everywhere. So it's not a fun time for players, especially the players that, you know, kind of know that they're on the move.
All right. Well, you don't have to worry about getting traded this year.
I'm sweating, I'm getting nervous.
Networks don't tend to trade their analysts or anything like that. But let's play a little GM matchmaker and talk about some guys that have, you know, been the subject of trade rumors leading up. And you can speculate for once in your life about other people and not worry about yourself. We'll start with the New York Rangers. We'll start with Chris Kreider. He is probably one of the most talked about players as we get closer to the deadline. Where do you think him as a player would be a good fit?
I think a good fit, I don't think he'd necessarily go there, not in the division, but is Boston.
Okay.
I mean, just the style of play is a north-south type of guy, hard to the net, hard shot, just their style of play and the way they go. I think he'd be a good fit there. Also, St. Louis would be another one.
Okay.
Just that style of play, I think he fits in very nicely. But kind of get away from it. New York's in a tough spot with him. I mean, what do they do with him? I mean, I guess it comes down to where they see themselves in the rebuild is the biggest thing. If they're
because they're not like a Detroit or an Ottawa,
they're
not
closer.
A playoff team.
Yeah,
so it's weird.
I think if they see themselves 2 years away, 3 years away, they hold on to it. But if they, you know, 3, 4, 5 years away, I think you trade them and you get some prospects for them.
Could they trade him and then potentially have him back there?
That's always a possibility, but also they're in some cap situations.
That's a good point.
There's a lot going on there, but he's definitely a name that I think a lot of teams are calling about, and he can definitely help a playoff contender.
Well, speaking of a lot going on in New York, they also have three goaltenders on their hands, and Hank is obviously very much in control of his own future, so he's going to go where he wants to go. But just as a spectator and a fan of the game, when you look at the three goaltenders in New York, what do you think is the best scenario for the Rangers? Is it dealing Georgiev and having Hank as a mentor? It's a tough spot.
It's a very, very tough spot. I mean, I guess you have to decide if Georgiev is your going to be the guy of the future. That's the biggest question, right? I mean, or are you going to keep Hank long term?
Because Shesterkin is supposed to be like their highly touted goaltending prospect. So if he's the future.
Yeah, and it comes down to Hank, like you said, what he wants to do. It's a very confusing situation that, you know, Gorton and Drury have there. I mean, it's tough. I mean, Hank, I just can't see him being a 1B guy and being a mentor. I just know how competitive he is. I've played with him.
You're the perfect guy to have this conversation with because you know him. Yeah. And you've played with him and you know him well. So everyone says the same thing. He's uber competitive, so competitive, one of the most competitive guys in the league. But he wants to be loyal to New York, which I respect. But I also want to see Hank chase the cup. Do you think there's ever a chance that as this three-headed goaltending monster, for lack of a better word, goes on and he makes less starts, that he could change his mind?
Absolutely. And I think another thing for Hank is maybe the best situation for the organization is for him to move on.
Yeah.
You know, depending on where they are in their development. I mean, he's got a pretty big cap hit there in New York, and
that would open up some space.
It'd be a big cap hit to be a backup or a mentor at that price. So maybe he thinks, you know, what's best for the organization is for me to go somewhere else and try to win a cup. And his contract's up after the following year. Maybe they bring him back to New York after that. You know,
yeah.
there's no reason why that can't happen either if he really wants to be in New York and stay in New York.
And retire there.
And retire in New York. But
I think, too, like, I do think it's the best situation for both the team and for Hank. Like, I think Hank should chase the cup. He's one of the best goaltenders of this generation to play, yep. And he doesn't have a Stanley Cup ring yet.
Yes. I'd love to see him win.
The thing is, like, I think if he, you know, woke up tomorrow and said, you know what, trade me to a contender. I want to chase the cup. I also want to open up cap space for you guys to try to improve the Rangers. I think the fan base would support him on that. I don't think it would be a Jonathan Tavares situation where they're like, he left us. I think it would be, yeah, you know what, Hank, you did so much and we're not going to win a cup this year. Probably not next year either.
Yep.
Go chase the cup. I think he'd have support.
I agree. I don't think the fan base would fault him at all for that. And almost, you know, like you said, the opposite. He's opening up some cap space for them. And he is New York, though. That's on the other side. I mean,
He's so New York.
Hank's New York with his style. He loves the city. And it's hard to picture him anywhere else.
Oh, my gosh. How weird would that be, seeing him in a different jersey? Whew, that'd be strange. All right, let's continue this GM matchmaker game. How about Peugeot in Ottawa? He's somebody that's gotten a lot of press as well as a valuable asset for a team.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who needs goal scoring, really. I mean, he's the type of guy, and you've seen him in playoff too. He's performed before.
Yeah, he's got that experience,
right? So he'd be a good addition to a couple teams, and also like Arizona Coyotes that are trying to score. The Islanders too have come up for him.
I think the Islanders situation is really intriguing because I don't think you can just go out and get a Taylor Hall or a Phil Kessel or, you know, that type of goal scorer. You need someone because of the system that they play that is so defensive that can play that way and also flourish in it. And I don't think that's necessarily just any goal scorer. I think you have to be the type of player that sort of fits that mentality as well.
Yeah, that's a great point you make. And he is a type of guy that can kind of do that defensive hockey as well. So that's a great point. Islanders would be a really good fit for him as well. But he'll definitely be on the move. It's just a matter of where.
All right. Let's do one more. Let's stay in Ottawa. How about Anthony Duclair? Because he was so hot to start the season, had all these goals. He's an all-star for the first time in his career. He's cooled off a little bit. Do you think that's affected his value at all?
100%, yeah. Because, I mean, there's question marks on him coming into the year.
Yeah, it'd be different if he's, like, for the last five years, he's got, pedigree.
And then I think he opened up a lot of eyes in the beginning of the year, and now obviously he's cooled down. So I think a lot of teams are wondering, was it just a flash in the pan early on in the year?
Right.
Is that truly who he is, or is it the guy that we've seen for the past couple of years? So his value definitely has gone down, I think, in Ottawa. And some teams are going to try to probably lowball to get him just because of, you know, how he's played of late. But
I'm curious to see how many players we see moved at the deadline that are just lower cap hits. Because I think there's quite a few playoff teams that are in salary crunch situations where they don't have a whole lot of room.
Yep.
So I wonder if we'll see sort of lesser big-name players, I guess, as the best way to put it, move at the deadline that we don't expect just because their hit is less.
Yeah, I mean, the cap situation obviously handcuffs a lot of teams.
Yeah.
A lot of teams are right up against the cap. But, I mean, on Duclair also, I mean, in Ottawa, he's getting every opportunity. He's on power plays, on the first line. So when he gets traded to a contender,
it won't be like that.
It's not going to be that way. And in the past, when he's not on the first line, first power play, he hasn't produced or hasn't been as effective. So I'm sure teams are looking at that as well.
Interesting. Trade deadline just over 2 weeks away. Hard to believe.
Yeah,
like, we're getting to the real good part of the season, though, pretty soon. Once deadline's done, it's like race to the playoffs. And there's so many teams that are still in it, which I think is probably why we haven't seen any deals yet. Usually there's a couple.
Yeah, exactly. I think everybody's still hoping they can make a late push.
Yeah, everyone's still got hope that their team can make the postseason. All right, you ready to get to this week's guest? I'm super excited.
Let's do it.
It is February, so it is Black History Month, and today's guest is the first African-American player to compete in the NWHL. We are super excited to have Blake Bolden on the show. Blake, how you doing?
I'm so excited to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Where are you calling from today?
I am calling from sunny San Diego, California.
She threw in the sunny just to
get us. I thought like it was like decent here because it's like it's sort of spring-ish outside. Like it's raining and it's cloudy, but the temperature's not that bad. But yeah,
right.
you win.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of why I moved out here, so I would have no complaints at all with the weather. So
yes.
I'm very happy.
Smart move by you. But I want to start this conversation by talking about Wyclef Jean. We saw the first part of the off-ice feature debut last night. We had Wyclef in studio at NHL Network yesterday, and I got to tell you, Blake, he was singing your praises big time. He was like, this girl dominated all of us at this video game. Like, she hustled us. What was that experience like for you, and how bad did you beat the boys at the video game?
You know, let's see. I love playing video games, but I don't have an Xbox. So they handed me the controller, and I was like, I never played this before, guys. Just tell me what to do, and I'll execute. So they thought I was hustling them. I promise I had never played that game before, but it was a domination. It was total domination.
That's awesome.
I love it. I love it so much. Repping the ladies very well.
That's awesome.
Let's go, ladies. Yeah.
What was your big takeaway from that evening at Wyclef's house? Because there was a bunch of different people there. You guys had some really interesting conversation. But for you personally, when you walked away from that event or that filming, what was your big takeaway?
Honestly, I was really excited because I feel like the NHL is really pushing this everybody can play mantra and just trying to diversify the sport and make everyone aware. So for me, I thought it was amazing and I had such a good time. I met some amazing players and obviously Wyclef is incredible and just I was enamored with his personality and just opening his house to us. So it was really fun. The conversation was at times difficult, but it was just the conversations that sometimes we need to have so everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think sometimes like being uncomfortable is a good thing for everyone.
Yeah, and you know, we all got a little bit closer and learned a few things about each other, so that was really cool.
That's awesome.
I got to ask you about All-Star Weekend in St. Louis. Obviously, we saw the 3-on-3 women's event, Team Canada, Team USA. For you, how much did it mean to you that the NHL was not just inviting one woman or four women to All-Star Weekend, but a whole group of women and putting on an event on that stage?
Those girls crushed it, don't you think?
Oh, it was so good. It was so good.
It was the highlight of the weekend, I think. It was awesome.
Right. They put on a show. I mean, that was just the women showcasing our talents, and they were great people for that part. Obviously, they have an incredible pedigree, both teams. So just to have them out there representing for all of us female hockey players and us just trying to bind together and formulate something for younger ladies in the future, it was very, very powerful. And I was watching, like, hanging on by every thread, like, it's crazy.
It was so good. And I said this coming out of the weekend to EJ, who I work with here at the network on a daily basis. I was like, the biggest thing for me was watching it and watching what was happening on social media while the 3-on-3 was going on was, you know, we know Cammy Granato, we know Natalie Spooner, we know Hillary, like we know these big names from the Olympics, but I loved seeing that Twitter was going crazy over Anne-Renee Desbien, who, you know, I didn't know much about going into it. And I think that's the point, right? Is that like,
right,
there's more than just the Olympic stage and what happens at the Olympics. This hockey is competitive hockey all the time, especially when those two countries meet.
Absolutely. Good point. I love it.
And Blake, what are some of the players that you kind of look up to, either male or female, that you try to model your game after or just role models to you?
Right now, I am all about the female empowerment.
Yes.
And it doesn't even honestly have to be ice hockey. For me, Serena Williams and her drive just makes me mentally just zone in. I really, really like Casey Bellamy's game. I've been a teammate of hers for years now, and I think she's an incredible defenseman on the blue line for Team USA. One of my college defensive partners, Emily Falzer Matheson now, she and I are an amazing dynamic duo, and I feel like I've been in the game so long. So, like, all my teammates are my role models and vice versa. And it's just been so fun to play with them and just to see them explode and us just come up together and do the darn thing, I feel like.
I love that answer. And you made me think of a funny story. Like, Emily, we had her husband on the network, I think last year or the year before, and we asked him, like, you know, when she comes to the games, what's that like? He's like, honestly, like, it's kind of brutal because, like, she knows if I had a bad game. Like, when other people come, it's like, oh, good game. And inside my head, I'm like, actually, it was pretty bad for me. It's like, with her, it's like, she's like, what were you doing on that one play? And I just think that dynamic is so awesome and funny in a lot of different ways.
Oh, my gosh. Imagine. That would be crazy.
Like, oh, man. Like, you, yeah,
that'd be
damn,
tough.
Can't hide anything. I got to ask you about sort of your upbringing and your background, because I think it's important for our viewers to know, you know, how you got to the place that you're at now. Now, from what I understand, you're from Ohio, but you went to school in Lake Placid. How did that come to be for you?
Well, I was playing boys hockey, and I didn't know anything about prep school. I thought that prep school was just a place that rich people sent their children.
Yeah.
So I kind of, when I got a phone call asking if I would like to check it out, I was like, I don't want to go there. That sounds crazy. Like, one, I can't afford that. My parents can't do that. But they're like, no, we really want you. This will get you into college. You know, you can't play boys hockey forever. Female college coaches need to be able to see you. So that was kind of the mindset that I had going into accepting that and just being like, all right, well, this is the next step. And I'm packing my bags and going up to Lake Placid, which was 10 hours away from my home.
My goodness.
Wow. How old were you when you did that?
I was 14 years old.
Wow.
So, and an only child. So my mom was like, what?
Oh, no. She must have been like, happy and supportive, but also slightly devastated.
Yeah. Her baby girl is just taking off, and I haven't looked back since.
Well, you are crushing the game, and I saw on your Twitter account that you're now a scout for the LA Kings. How did? First off, congratulations, and second,
thank you.
How did that happen?
Honestly, the universe is just working in my favor right now.
It's a magical thing when you believe in it.
You know, it just happened. I was at an event with Black Girl Hockey Club in L.A., and Luke Robitaille is walking downstairs and to introduce himself to us, and he just comes up. And Kwame, who is the producer of Soul on Ice.
Okay.
And he introduced us and was like, hey, Luke, I want you to meet Blake. And he was like, oh, Blake, nice to meet you. I love everything you guys are doing for the women's game. And then he just was like, are you interested in scouting? And I was like, yeah, you know, you're Luke Robitaille.
That's
and
awesome.
I am open to all opportunities, so let's go for it. And that was kind of how it worked.
That's
awesome.
Incredible. That gave me chills just hearing that just, you know, by chance you meet the legendary Luke Robitaille, and that's what the conversation leads to.
Right. He said, here's my email address, email me. And I was like trying to remember the email address the whole time.
Oh, he just sent it to you? He didn't give you a card?
Repeating it over and over the rest of the night?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So has that started yet, or is that's just newly announced and will start in the future?
No, I have been onboarded and I have been scouting since January 3rd. So I'm a month and some change in, basically exactly a month in. And right now I'm headed up to Bakersfield to scout some teams tonight. So
that's
a lot of traveling.
So you're loving it?
A lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, it's so cool. And this is what we're all talking about, is just women being in these roles that are, you know, usually male roles. And it's just good to see a little bit of shift. And I'm proud to be a part of the Kings organization. And I think that speaks volumes to their leadership and where they're trying to move, you know?
I love it. I mean, having two daughters of my own, thank you for everything that you do for women's equality. And it's amazing watching you do it. And I just wanted to thank you for doing that and being a role model to all the young girls out there.
Thank you so much. It's honestly a privilege. I have had a blast in my career, and clearly I can't stop, so.
And you shouldn't. Can't stop, won't stop.
There it is.
Yeah.
Really quickly before we let you go, because you said something that popped out to me there at the end. It is Black History Month, and you mentioned the Black Girls Hockey Club, and we actually had one of their founders on the network, I want to say maybe 2 years ago, and they had done a whole thing with the Washington Capitals, and Braden Holtby was very vocal about his support of them. How did you get connected with them, and what do you make about what they're doing, just for our listeners to kind of give them a background on that club?
Yeah, well, Black Girl Hockey Club is founded by Renee Hess, and she has worked so hard to just get a bunch of people that are of color that are interested in the sport, and she creates these experiences for these groups of people to go to the games, to interact with the staff and the players, and kind of get just like a front row red carpet all access pass to a hockey game, which is really cool. And she supported me because she found out that I was the first Black player to play in the United States. And she, you know, social media is such a powerful thing where it can connect you to people that you know, if you don't have their phone number, just send them a direct message and
yeah.
Boom, you have a relationship. So she and her crew came out and supported me in an all-star game, and that was really awesome. And they just invited me to come up to LA knowing that I was in San Diego to be a guest appearance, and it was a fun time, and they do such great work. I think they travel all around the country and do these events, and people are loving it, and she's working really hard to spread, you know, what she's doing, and it's great.
Yeah, her impact is growing immensely over the last few years, for sure. And you mentioned the universe, right? And your paths cross with her, and then your path crosses with Luke Robitaille, and now you're headed to Bakersfield to scout for the Kings. So, you know, I truly believe everyone has a purpose and everything happens for a reason, and you are 100% living out yours. We really appreciate the time. Thank you so much for coming on, and have fun in Bakersfield.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. This was really fun.
Thank you.
Blake Bolden, the first African-American player to compete in the NWHL and now a scout for the LA Kings. And we're seeing more and more women being hired in those types of roles. Haley Wickenheiser in Toronto, Cami Granato works with Seattle and their organization, which is great to see.
Awesome. I love it.
I mean,
having two young daughters of my own, I think it's awesome to have role models and people to look up to that are in very prominent spots in sports, and it's awesome to see. I love it.
Do your girls watch hockey or play sports or anything like that?
They play sports.
I assume they watch hockey and they live with you.
They do, yeah. I actually get mad when they got hockey on. But
like enough hockey
already. Yeah, enough hockey.
That's
but,
funny.
Yeah, my oldest figure skates, and my younger one does horseback riding. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's super cool. I love that. All right, so we got the Oscars coming up this weekend. Are you an award show person? Do you watch the award shows?
If I catch it, I'll watch it, but I don't.
Okay, so
it's not like I'm setting the DVR for it.
No. Okay, so like the Rangers weren't having like Oscar parties back in the day or anything like
yeah,
that?
Oscar
I mean, listen, you never know.
Yeah.
Some of these teams, they're super into The Bachelor. Like, they're never really know.
That wasn't us.
All right, well, we're going to do our own version of the Oscars. How about that? We're going to give out
good.
Some Oscar awards or Academy Awards to hockey players in similar categories. So let's start with the first one. We'll go Best Director. We'll apply that to coaches. Would you give that to a Mike Sullivan, a John Tortorella, maybe someone else? Who would you give out the Oscar for best coach?
Probably Mike Sullivan right now, just with everything they've dealt with in Pittsburgh, the injuries, how long he's been there for, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes your voice can wear on players and your message isn't always accepted.
Oh, so that's a real thing,
after
eh?
After that many years. Yeah, I mean, you could see it in coaches how quickly they're turned over, 3-4 years or however long it is. So to him, to keep delivering that message to those players, having them respond to it, being able to plug guys in that know the system and can learn the system, what he's done there is tremendous.
So I feel like this is not going to shock you, because every time here on this show I bring up Torts and how much I love him. I swear this is not a biased take, though. I think John Tortorella could be best coach right now, only because I think you know, the Blue Jackets have dealt with their fair share of injuries as well, much like the Penguins. I would say the difference for Columbus is the culture. Like, Pittsburgh has had that winning culture, that work ethic culture for a long time. That's why they've won a couple of cups in the last decade. But for Columbus, they lose Bobrovsky, they lose Panarin, they lose Deschene, they lose Dzingel, the one guy they thought that they could keep because I think he went to school in Ohio or something of that nature. They lose all those guys. They become sort of like a joke coming into the season. Oh, like, they're done. They're not going to do anything. And not only are they relevant, they're one of the best stories of the season. Elvis, a big part of it, but I think, you know, they've had a ton of injuries too. And I think Torts deserves some credit because I think, and maybe I'm just a jerk, but if I was on that team going into this year, I would have been like, man, we're such a joke. Nobody wants to stay here. Nobody wants to stay with this team. Like, we can't catch a break. I just think there would be a lot of factors that would just make you feel unmotivated, you know?
I mean, on the flip side, Torts is the ultimate motivator. And he knows how to push guys' buttons. He knows how to get to guys. He knows how to have a team bond together and play better than they actually are.
So he gets the best out of his players,
He definitely does. And, I mean, you could argue Torts, too. Both my old coaches, Torts and Sully, were both out in New York.
Go figure.
But, both those guys, I think, could be up for the best director.
Well, if you're listening on the podcast version or watching on YouTube, let us know if you had to pick between Sullivan or Torts for best coach at this point, because there's still season left.
I mean, there's other nominees out there, but let's keep it with those two.
We'll go to those two. Yeah, yeah. These are the rules of our game, okay?
We make the rules
in this house. All right, Sully or Torts. All right, how about best supporting actor? The way I look at best supporting actor would be maybe a backup goaltender. We're seeing the emergence of tandems being very beneficial to top contending teams. Where would you maybe see that? I know my pick.
Well, it's pretty easy right now, isn't it?
Is it?
Elvis? I mean, him stepping in?
I mean, you could go Elvis, I suppose. Yeah. Although, Korpisalo being injured, doesn't that make Elvis like the number one?
I guess, yeah, you're right there.
So I'm eliminating Elvis.
Yeah, you're eliminating Elvis?
My game, my rules.
Jeez, I thought I was part of this.
You want to know who my pick is?
Yeah, let's hear.
My pick is Anton Hedonin in Dallas.
I like it.
I have some numbers. Hold, please, because I'm not a robot. I can't remember everything. okay, .927 save percentage this season, fifth amongst goalies qualified for that position. Slightly better than Bishop's numbers, but Bishop is their number one guy.
Yep.
And I think Hedonin has been fantastic, and people aren't really talking about him.
Yep, I agree with you.
So he'd be my pick.
I like it.
But you could also go Jaro Halak. Yep. I assume his numbers in Boston are pretty good, too.
Pretty good there, yep. So. But you're seeing this duo of goaltenders so much more now than you did 2-3 years ago, where teams have to have that kind of 1A, 1B, and the Leafs are kind of wishing they had that right now.
Yeah, and that's the luxury, right? Like, in Dallas and in Boston and places like that, even I'll throw St. Louis in there, too, because Jake Allen's been really good this year for the Blues. It allows you to give your starter some rest heading towards the postseason. If you know you're going to make it, like those teams all look pretty confident they're going to make the playoffs, you're able to give your starter a little bit of rest, save them some mojo, so to speak, for the postseason.
Yeah.
I think it's a huge benefit to teams that have that.
It's a huge advantage, I think, but you run into trouble with some cap issues with it if your backup's making too much money. But
that's true. That's a good point. All right, how about best picture? How could we do best picture? We could do like best game, or we could do best story of the year.
I mean, I'm going to go back to Battle Alberta for the best game.
Okay. Or best like trio of games. There's definitely like, it fits the mold of like best movie or best picture because there's drama, there's conflict, there's resolution even. I mean, Cassian, right? Like in the end, Cassian and Kachuk, they fight, but afterwards they like shake hands like respectable men. And Cassian said, you know what, kid? Like, I respect you for doing it.
That's my pick.
Yeah, that could be like a little movie there, I suppose. Yeah. I think Alex Ovechkin could be a pick for best story, that's for
best story, yep.
I think, but just chasing 700 and just crossing off the legends off of his list as he climbs the ladder.
People he's passing every day, it's unbelievable. Yeah. It's passing some of them in the same game, just I know.
It's just, you know what I love about it? I love the messages that we're getting from those players. Like Mark Messier releasing a statement about Ovi. Stevie Y probably had the best one saying, like, if you ever pass Gretzky, I want an invite to the party. Like, I got to be there because that would be quite a party. All right, let's do one more. How about we do best cinematography? So that would be like prettiest play. And I think a lot of people would probably go to Connor McDavid because of that goal against the Leafs that was pretty sick.
Yeah.
But I like Kachuk's goal. Do you remember Matthew Kachuk's goal?
Yeah, I do.
Between the legs.
I think if I go,
I just think it was very pretty.
If you go from prettiness, just I guess you could go to teams you like to watch that are pretty, like.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
And I think for me, that'd be Colorado. I just love the way they play and just.
Yeah, they're fun.
When they're on TV, I want to watch them.
You know,
they get that physical aspect, but they have so much speed and talent. And that's a game where I see if Colorado's on or some. I'm watching the Colorado game, so.
Okay.
Kind of went in a different direction.
This is, I don't know, you do what you want. It's our game.
It's our game.
This isn't even an Oscar. See, I'm just going to make one up right now. Best redemption story. It's not done yet, but I think it's heading that way. The Tampa Bay Lightning.
There you go.
They look like they're back. Are they back?
Rope-a-dope. Yes.
I think they're
100%
back.
100% they're back, yeah.
I almost think it's, I don't want to jinx Tampa, but I feel like there's been instances in the past where a team has gone through something absolutely heartbreaking and devastating and tough to get over and then come back and won a cup either the next year or a couple years later. Like the Boston Bruins are the team I think of. Remember when they played Philly? Mm-hmm. And they were up 3-0 and then they were up 3-0 in game 7 and then they lost.
Then
they won the cup. I think it was the next year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Against Vancouver?
Pretty close, yeah. It might have been the next year, yeah.
Blown series.
You got to lose before you can win, I guess, right?
Yeah. So,
but no, I mean, a lot of people are pushing the panic button with them, but I wasn't. It's just the talent they have. And Vasilevskiy's been unbelievable.
He's been so good.
He's back to his Vezina Trophy winning year last year.
And they need that.
They have to have that.
Yeah.
Because they're going to give up chances. I mean, let's be honest. They're a high-octane offensive team that has a lot of speed. They're trying to limit the turnovers, which they have done. But there's going to be some in their play. Just the nature of the beast, the way they play. And
Cooch is looking good right now, too.
He's looking really good. Stammer, he's on a 8-9 game point streak. It seems like everything he's touching is going in the net.
They need that.
Hattie's playing well again. So for me, their main catalyst, and I guess you go back to supporting actor.
Okay. Yes, I love that you're bringing the Oscar mix
if
back
you were,
in.
When I first saw we were doing this, his name popped in my head right away, but we went to goalies was Braden Point.
Okay.
He is the motor that runs that team. Right now he's playing with Cooch and Stammer, but he is such a good player. He should be up for a Selke. He's so good defensively, his speed, his creativity, and I think on Tampa he is the most important player on that team.
Oh, wow. I like that. So he's sort of like a glue player on that team. Like they are not the same team without Braden
Absolutely
Point.
Absolutely not. And they were missing him early on in the year. He had two hip surgeries in the offseason.
The fact that he's even playing the way he's playing after having not one hip surgery, but two?
Two, yeah, exactly.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, he came back and it takes a little while to get up to speed after, obviously, two hip surgeries, but
I would hope so.
His game's back, and no coincidence, his game's back, he's back playing, and they're playing the way they are.
All right, I got one more award, and it's not a real one. It's a made-up one, but I think best NHL Network analyst in a commercial goes to EJ Raddick.
Yes, he's unbelievable.
Have you seen the commercial?
Yeah, I didn't until you just showed it to me. Yeah, it's
he was
unreal.
So good.
The pen, the sandwich, I didn't see that from him, being able to do that.
You know what? Like, I love EJ. I work with him every day. He is the reason that I am good at my job. But I didn't think he would be
I didn't either.
Either.
I thought it'd be like maybe his Dancing with Wyclef yesterday.
Oh my gosh, his Dancing with Wyclef was so embarrassing, but so good at the same time. Like,
it was
just
perfect.
Made my life complete. But my question for you, because as a former professional athlete, you guys get asked to do all this promotional stuff all the time. Do you have anything that you, like any commercial or any promo or anything that you've had to do where you were like, oh, this is going to be bad. Like, I don't know if this is going to be good. Like,
reason
I think of this is because sometimes you hear athletes on the radio doing like a promo for some company and they sound really bad.
Well,
like,
I feel like as an athlete, you get hit with so many, right? Like,
your
PR guys come to you and like, oh, we have this brilliant idea. We're going to, like, one idea they had for me, they wanted me to dress me up as a leprechaun.
What?
And have me go to the mall on St. Patrick's Day and, like,
hold on.
And
they
like,
wanted you to be a leprechaun at the mall.
At the mall. And I go,
you turned that down.
I can't believe you even brought that to me. like, absolutely not. I'm not, and then like unveil myself, you know, like, oh, it's me. Actually, I'm like, first of all, I'm going to take my leprechaun head off and people are going to look at me and not even know who I am. One. And two, like, I'm not walking around a mall to leper, like.
Oh my God. I hope they were offering you good money.
No,
at least.
It was a team. It was no money. Like,
Did they get anyone to do it?
No, nobody did that.
I mean, if you had.
That's probably the worst request I've had that I've had to turn down. But there's been situations.
Did you pretend to be interested for like a second?
No.
Or were you right away like, no chance?
Well, I thought he was joking at first. I started laughing and then I was like, I'm not, I can't do that. Come on.
You know, it would have been a great story if you had done it, though. But you would never have lived it down.
I did a disguise thing in Tampa. It was a preseason game. I wore like a disguise. I had long hair and I went into the team shop and talked to shopper shopping. And that was pretty cool.
That would be cool.
That was fun.
Because then you're like surprising people and being like,
And at least at the team shop, you actually know that people.
And you're not dressed like
We'll recognize you when you take off the disguise, maybe.
In the team shop.
Yeah.
But I don't know if dressing up as a leprechaun would really work in any environment for you.
No.
Like you could have been in the rink in a leprechaun outfit and people would have been like, really? I don't look at you the same anymore, Callie.
Yeah,
would have been good move by you.
Yes.
Good move by you.
Stayed away from that.
All right. Well, you can catch Ryan Callahan on NHL Tonight. A big member, a big addition to the NHL Network team. You're on tonight, right?
Tonight, yep.
Yeah, 6 to 8. So he'll be covering the two games on the slate tonight with Kevin Weeks and Jameson Coyle. That does it for us. We will see you next time. Thanks for watching, listening, and all that good stuff. We'll see you later. Enjoy the Oscars if you're watching.